This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is a Bleacher Bunch production for the Fans First Sports Network. Please check out our other shows as well, Cup of Cubby Blue, Cubs PS Plus, and The Sun Ranto Show.
Play ball.
Round the internet we go, where we end up no one knows. Sit back and enjoy the show, down the baseball rabbit hole, down the baseball rabbit hole.
Hello, and welcome to the fifth inning of the Baseball Rabbit Hole, the baseball podcast where I look things up on the internet and see where they take me. This inning, I am actually returning to the rabbit hole from the fourth inning of the podcast. If you have already listened to the fourth inning of the Baseball Rabbit Hole, then you will know that I was talking about the All-Star games from both the Negro Leagues and Major League Baseball. While researching that first East-West game, I wanted to highlight all of the Baseball Hall of Famers that played in that game. It featured 13 Hall of Famers, but only 12 made it to Cooperstown. The 13th had his bust enshrined somewhere completely different, Springfield, Massachusetts. Some of you may know that Springfield is the home of the Basketball Hall of Fame, and that is where we dive into our first rabbit hole. Fats Jenkins was born in New York City as Clarence Reginald Jenkins. He got his start on the St. Christopher Club youth teams in the early aughts. And by aughts, I mean that decade 1900 to 1910. So by 1917, Jenkins had worked his way all the way up to the Big C team, where he was captain of the team that would be named the Colored Basketball World's Champions from 1917 to 1919 by the New York Age, the largest, most widely circulated African-American newspaper of the time. Jenkins then got picked up by the Loewende Big Five team in 1919 and went on to win the next four world titles with them. After his first season on the Big Five team, he also joined the New York Lincoln Giants and began his professional baseball career, which would last 20 seasons. But he never did quit basketball. In 1924, he jumped from the Loewende Big Five after four straight titles and joined the Harlem Renaissance team known as the Wrens, the first fully professional African-American-owned team. They won the final Colored Basketball World's Champions title in 1925. which meant that Fats Jenkins had won that championship for 8 of 9 years across 3 different teams. His new team, the Harlem Wrens, became one of the greatest professional basketball teams in history. Jenkins became the captain of that team in 1932 and led the team for over a decade. The 1933 Harlem Wrens were inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as a team, which is how Fats Jenkins got into the Hall of Fame. But he is yet to be inducted individually, although people are still working to get him elected on an individual basis. Throughout his time playing basketball at the highest levels, he was playing baseball at the highest levels as well. Fats was a contact guy with lots of speed, your quintessential leadoff man. He broke into baseball with the Lincoln Giants, but then got picked up by the Harrisburg Giants of the Eastern Colored League in 1923, where he played for the next 5 seasons. Jenkins hovered around the 300 mark with his batting average until 1927, when he really put it together with a 398 season. Yeah, 398 was his batting average for an entire season. He continued to play for 20 years across 14 different teams, including that appearance in the first East-West game that brought him to my attention. When he finally retired from baseball after the 1940 season, he had a 334 lifetime batting average and a 392 OBP. Even though his baseball career was over, he continued to play for the Harlem Wrens for another 2 seasons before retiring from basketball at age 44. So the thing that got me so interested in Fats Jenkins was that of all the Hall of Famers in that first East-West game, he was the only one in the Basketball Hall of Fame instead of the Baseball Hall of Fame. But of course, this just opened up yet another rabbit hole. When I come back, we are headed back to the Basketball Hall of Fame on this baseball podcast.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, this is a part of the show where I would normally tell you, go to my Patreon and support the show. But here's the thing. I screwed up the Patreon one time, so I went back to do it again. And when I was doing it, I thought to myself, I really shouldn't be doing a Patreon because I don't put these shows out very often. And it really just doesn't seem to make sense. So if you really want to support the show monetarily, hit me up on PayPal or Venmo at mcotton2019. That's the same for both of them. And you can give me money there if you'd like. Otherwise, if you really want to do something Patreon style, go to Patreon for Sonranto, S-O-N-R-A-N-T-O, and that's where I do my other podcast. You can give money there, and that would also support what I do. Thank you. Now back down the rabbit hole. Welcome back. As I was saying before, I was surprised to see Fats Jenkins on the first East-West team and in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He was a major force in basketball throughout the 1920s and 30s, and while looking into that, I found that he had played on the Loendi Big Five team, which led me to Cumberland Posey, who recruited Fats to that team. And now I'm down another rabbit hole. Cum Posey, as he was called, was the greatest basketball player of his era, earning a high school city championship in Pittsburgh, and then going on to Penn State, where he was the first black player on that team for 2 years in 1910 and 1911. In 1911, Posey formed the Monticello Athletic Association basketball team and led them to the Colored Basketball World's Championship of 1912. Also in 1911, Cumberland Posey started playing baseball for the famed Homestead Grays. By 1912, he was not only playing, but he was also booking the games and running the barnstorming Grays as they played from town to town. By 1920, he was the team owner. And he did all of this while still playing basketball at the highest levels possible. So back to basketball. Posey spent three seasons at Duquesne University, where he led the team in scoring from 1917 to 1919. So you'll remember that he played at Penn State from 1910 to 1911. Well, seems a little odd, but yeah, he was back in college playing for Duquesne University in 1917 to 1919. And then after Duquesne, playing alongside Fats Jenkins, the Loendi Big Five team that he organized and played for won their four straight titles from 1920 to 1923. So after an amazing run in basketball, Cumberland Posey retired so that he could focus solely on the Homestead Grays and baseball, which made sense since he did own the team. The Grays, under his successful management, were one of the best and most influential teams in baseball history. They were called the Homestead Grays because they originally formed in Homestead, Pennsylvania, just across the river from Pittsburgh. But with their success, they needed bigger venues, and so they moved across the river to Pittsburgh so that they could play in venues like Forbes Field, which was available anytime the Pittsburgh Pirates were out of town. Later on in their history, they ended up splitting their games between Pittsburgh and Washington, D.C., where they would play home games in a completely different town. Regardless of where they played, Pittsburgh, Washington, or Homestead, they always kept the Homestead name. While the first Negro National League formed and began playing in the 1920s, Cumberland Posey kept his team independent. The team's success and name recognition from the teens made it possible for the Grays to weather the worst of the Great Depression as a barnstorming team, which was also more profitable for Cumberland Posey. By the end of the 20s, about the same time he quit playing and began focusing on just running the team, Posey did come around on the idea of the Negro Leagues. He joined the American Negro League in 1929, but that league only lasted one season. So, Cumberland Posey took the Homestead Grays back to barnstorming until 1932. In 1931, Gus Greenlee bought the Pittsburgh Crawfords. Now, this was a major threat to Posey's Homestead Grays. So Posey decided he would start a league with the Grays to give them more of an advantage over the Crawfords. In 1932, Posey formed the ambitious but ill-fated East-West League. In addition to the Homestead Grays, Cum Posey was also the owner of the Detroit Wolves. He used this to his advantage by shuffling players back and forth between the two teams. The Wolves were one of the best teams in history with four eventual Hall of Famers: Cool Papa Bell, Mule Settles, Judy Johnson, and Willie Wells. They could have been the East-West League champs with the Grays holding second place, but the league folded before they could complete one season. With the failure of the Wolves and the league, Posey was struggling financially, which led to the Grays being raided by the Pittsburgh Crawfords as Gus Greenlee started his own league, the much more successful Second Negro National League. Posey was down, but never out. He took on new partners in the Homestead Grays to help with the finances and returned to barnstorming for a few years before becoming a part of the Negro National League in 1935. In the 11 seasons that Posey owned the Grays in the Negro National League, they won 9 straight pennants and 2 of the 4 Negro World Series they played in from 1942 to 1945. Cumberland Posey died in the spring of 1946, before the baseball season started. While he was always a fierce competitor and businessman, he was respected throughout baseball. Before his death, he had been working with Branch Rickey and the Dodgers to figure out how to integrate Major League Baseball. In 2006, Posey was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame as an executive, and 10 years later, he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame as a player. Posey is the only person enshrined in both the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Basketball Hall of Fame. While Posey had recruited Fats Jenkins to play basketball for him, Jenkins never played on any of Posey's baseball teams, but he did play for their rival, the Pittsburgh Crawfords, in 1938. While Fats Jenkins and Cumberland Posey might have been two of the best two-sport players to ever do it, there were more. And after the break, I'm going to run through a whole bunch of players that played both baseball and some other sport. Hey, everybody. You know what this podcast needs? More listeners like you. If you want to help me out, please share this podcast around to your friends and let them all know that they should subscribe as well. Another way to support the podcast would be to give me a 5-star rating somewhere on the internet, wherever podcasts are rated. Thanks, and now back down the rabbit hole. As I said, there were a number of baseball players that played other sports. So I decided to take this last part of the rabbit hole to talk about as many as I could.
Hey!
Professional players, regardless of their chosen sports, are amazing athletes. Baseball players are no different, and it turns out that there are quite a few who have distinguished themselves in many other college sports. In fact, there are so many, I really can't go through every single one of them, so I picked the best ones, or at least the ones that I thought were the best, and decided to just tell you about those, but just know this, there are definitely more than what I'm about to list. And just to keep it easy, I'm going to go in alphabetical order. The first guy is Cliff Aberson. Cliff served in World War II from 1943 to 1946. When he was discharged, he went on to Wisconsin and played the 1946 NFL season with the Green Bay Packers as an Ironman tailback and defensive back. The following summer of 1947, he caught on with the Chicago Cubs and played in 63 games over 3 seasons. So, not really a starter, but definitely not many back in that day were playing both professional football and professional baseball. Now, most of the players that I'm going to talk about or have talked about were ancient history in terms of sports. But Eddie Alvarez is different. He was playing baseball from 2020 to 2022. He broke into the league with the Miami Marlins in 2020, the pandemic COVID-shortened season, and he played in 12 games. In 2021, he played in 24 games, and then they traded him to the Dodgers, where in 2022, he got into 14 games. Now, unfortunately, Eddie Alvarez never hit well at all. So, he's no longer playing professional baseball. But his true claim to fame is that he actually won a silver medal in speed skating for the United States Olympic team in the 2014 Olympics. And if we are talking about Olympic athletes playing baseball, we absolutely have to talk about Jim Thorpe, who won the Olympic gold medals in the decathlon and the pentathlon in the 1912 Olympics before he became a star in the early years of the NFL. Less well known is that he also played 6 seasons in Major League Baseball for the New York Giants, Cincinnati Reds, and the Boston Braves. He was one of the greatest Olympians and football players in history, so I guess having a baseball career as kind of a bench guy gets lost in the shuffle, and his time barnstorming with a professional basketball team was almost completely forgotten. But yeah, 4 different sports at the highest levels. Jim Thorpe was maybe the greatest athlete ever. Let's move on to Sammy Byrd, who played for the Yankees and the Reds from 1929 to 1936, winning a World Series in 1932 with the Yankees. After his baseball career was over, he moved on to play golf and had 11 professional wins in his career. He is the only man to ever play in a World Series and in the Masters Golf Tournament, in which he finished third in 1941. Damaso Garcia played for the Toronto Blue Jays from 1980 to 1986. But after he burned his uniform following a rough patch, he was traded and played a bit with the Braves and Expos over the next couple years. Before he made it to the big leagues, he had played soccer as the captain of the Dominican Republic national football team during the 1974 Central American and Caribbean Games. Now, Damaso Garcia wasn't a well-known name, but our next guy was Bob Gibson. He was a Hall of Fame pitcher who spent his minor league off seasons in 1957 and 1958 playing for the Harlem Globetrotters. He ultimately decided to quit basketball to focus on baseball, and I'm pretty sure that was the right decision, seeing as he is a Hall of Fame pitcher. In fact, another Hall of Fame pitcher played for the Harlem Globetrotters too. Fergie Jenkins of the Cubs, no relation to Fats Jenkins, spent 1965 to 1967 playing with the Globetrotters. His signature with the Globetrotters was to give up a home run to Meadowlark Lemon. He quit giving up homers in basketball games after 67 and focused on just striking out actual baseball players over 3,000 times in his career. Matt Kinzer is the only player to have put on uniforms for both the Detroit Tigers and the Detroit Lions. He took advantage of the 1987 NFL strike to jump into the NFL as a punter. He only got to play one game, but as we all know, the punter for the Lions gets a ton of work. Moving on, let's see. Dick Ricketts, no relation to the Cubs ownership, as far as I know. He played in Major League Baseball from 1955 to 1964. And he also played in the NBA from 1955 to 1958 while in the minor leagues. He was drafted by both the St. Louis Hawks of the NBA and the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, while that sounds like the perfect scenario, you forget. When you get drafted into the NBA, you go directly to the big league team. When you get drafted by a baseball team, you go to the minor league team. Well, the Cardinals minor league team was in Rochester, New York. So, Dick Ricketts asked the St. Louis Hawks to trade him to the Rochester Royals so that he could pitch for the Rochester Red Wings to stay with the Cardinals organization while also still playing basketball. The Rochester Royals would eventually become the Sacramento Kings. And although I had never heard of them prior to this, it appears they were the 1951 NBA champions, but Rochester was just too small of a town for them to really make a profit, so they decided to move to Cincinnati, so they became the Cincinnati Royals in 1957. So Dick Ricketts also played for the Cincinnati Royals. Now, he decided to retire from basketball, not because of the problems with the team moving cities and all of that, but actually because he saw his friend Maurice Stokes get knocked out during a game, which led to serious illness and paralysis for the rest of Stokes' life. That freaked Dick Ricketts out, and so he went to baseball for the rest of his career because it was a much safer sport. Gene Conley also played for the Major League Baseball and the NBA in the 50s and 60s. Now, he never quit either sport. He won the World Series with the Milwaukee Braves in 1957, and then he won three NBA championships with the Boston Celtics from 1959 to 1961. He's the only player in history to have both a World Series and an NBA championship ring. Another Boston Celtic that played baseball was Chuck Connors. He played one game for the Dodgers, two seasons for the Expos, and finished his baseball career with the Cubs, where he played 66 games. He played in the NBA in the 40s, the Major League Baseball in the 50s, but he eventually found his way to what actually made him famous, which was acting, where he was best known as The Rifleman, which was a Western that ran on ABC for 5 years. Now, speaking of Cowboys, Madison Bumgarner competes as a professional team roper in his off seasons under the name Mason Saunders. he used the assumed name so that people wouldn't realize that he was also a professional baseball pitcher and World Series champion for the San Francisco Giants. Lastly, I thought I would talk about Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts came up with the Red Sox, played for them for a number of years before moving to the Los Angeles Dodgers on the entire other side of the country. But what a lot of people don't realize is that he is also a pro bowler. Yes, he has competed in events on the Pro Bowling Association Tour since 2015. And as far as I can tell, he's won about $200 total on the tour, which is about $365 million less than he'll make playing baseball. So I don't know if he's going to quit baseball to focus on bowling anytime soon. But it is interesting that he competes in professional bowling tournaments. Now, of course, I'm sure a lot of you out there are saying, what about Deion Sanders? What about Bo Jackson? Well, of course, Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson are two of the greatest athletes that have ever lived. They were amazing playing for in the NFL and in Major League Baseball. But you know about them. And if you don't, you can just watch ESPN 30 for 30 to find out more. Everybody's known about them for a long time, so I figured I would just spotlight some of the guys maybe you didn't know about. And with that, I'm going to climb out of this rabbit hole. Of course, there are more stories about two-sport baseball players, and maybe I'll get to them on some other later extra innings or something like that of the baseball rabbit hole. But for now, I'm done with this one. We're going to get out of this rabbit hole. And until next inning, keep rounding those bases.
You're out.
Now for the box score. This episode of the Baseball Rabbit Hole was written by Michael Cotton, produced by Michael Cotton, edited by Michael Cotton, recorded by Michael Cotton, all on Audacity. The only thing I don't do is the theme song. That is by the incomparable Danny Rocket. Take it away, Danny.
Round the internet we go, where we end up no one knows. Sit back and enjoy the show. Down the baseball rabbit hole, down the baseball rabbit hole.